It's 1 o'clock, and it is time for Skald's Hall here on CITR in lovely Vancouver. And it is a very exciting time of year if you are the sort of person who is interested in theatrical festivals, because we have coming up in a couple of weeks the wonderful Brave New Playwrights Theatrical Festival that will be hosted right here at UBC, and it is featuring a lot of wonderful UBC talent, a lot of homegrown talent that are in various creative writing and theatrical programs we run here at UBC, and also actors and other participants from among the community. And the festival is going to run from April 3rd to April the 7th. Oh dear. It's going to run from April 3rd to April the 7th, and there are going to be two alternating programs, meaning on the first and third day, you're going to see one set of six plays, and on the second and fourth day, there's going to be a second set of six plays. And we're going to go through those really briefly here now. And also, and this is a great treat for us, we have on our show a few guests from various Brave New Playwrights, actors, writers, producers are going to be on the show. Starting off with the wonderful Brianna, who volunteered to give an interview. And coming up next week, we're going to have even more interviews with various cast members, writers, directors, and producers. To give you a very brief synopsis of these plays, however, the first program consists of six plays. The first one is called Suffocation. And it is described as, when Marcus, conspiracy theorist and unemployed shut-in, moves in with his sister Molly, a woman overcoming her own array of personal demons, their sibling relationship becomes strained by dependency. The second one on that list is a play about sisters, and that's what it's called. It's called A Play About Sisters. And it is described as, Kelsey is forced to move in with her sister Sarah after a sudden trauma. Unfortunately, just because they share chromosomes doesn't necessarily follow that they can share a crummy two-bedroom basement suite. The third one is called Video. Eve just wants to create a window in time for her future grown-up self. So why isn't Dean so keen on it? After all, this might be the most important day of their lives. Video records the post-grad moments looming in the horizon, and the questions that go with it. Stay or go, study or work, love or leave. Warning, mature themes and partial nudity. The next one is called Moan. And Lesko and Jude are two average young guys living an average guy lives in a basement suite. When they discover their closet has a chronic moaning problem, they call in a zany psychic to help. But their session with the talented Navi turns out to be a bit more complicated than they expected. Moan is an irreverent play about friendship, the rules of purgatory, sexuality, and the unseen becoming seen. But honestly, it's mostly about sexuality. And that was the description provided. What If I Did is the fifth one on the list. Jillian, Kat, Annie. Three sisters, three separate agendas. Jillian thinks Kat's 30th birthday party might prove a fundraising occasion for the co-opting. Kat wants her life out of limbo, but in the meantime, she'll settle for a few cheap drinks. And Annie? Annie has a few things she needs to get off her chest. A comedy about the maybe truths among the lies. What If I Did is a crucible of family dysfunction, resentment, and wrapping paper. And the last one in the first set is called Wait. When Patricia receives word that a letter from the man she loves is slowly but surely making its way across international borders to reach her, she decides to break away from her boring office routine and stand on her front porch and wait. All right, so those are the various and sundry sorts of things that you will see in the first act of The Brave New Prelude. It's not the first act, but the first day. And we're going to, coming up in a moment, be listening to the interview I did with Brianna Brown. And she is this year's organizer of the play, and she gracefully agreed to be on our show. And so coming up in just a moment, we are going to have that interview.
March 2nd to the 23rd, the 2013 Vancouver International Dance Festival invites you to experience the kinetic simulation of contemporary dance. Delivered to you on stages throughout Vancouver by outstanding dance artists from New Zealand, Denmark, Switzerland, Zimbabwe, Mexico, Malaysia, Korea, Montreal, and Vancouver. Information and tickets are available online at www.vidf.ca. or through our box office at 604-662-4966.
You are tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM, and we are here at Skald's Hall with our latest guest, Brianna Brown. Hello, Brianna.
Hello.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing just great, thanks.
Well, that's great. So tell us a little bit about yourself. Who is Brianna Brown?
Well, right now, Brianna Brown is the producer of the Brave New Playwrights Festival, which is happening at UBC from April 3rd to 7th. And I'm doing double duty because I'm also one of the playwrights in the festival this year as well.
How did you get started as an artist?
I've been doing it for as long as I can remember. I remember in elementary school, I always won the Author's Day. We all had to write books every year at school. I don't know if most schools do that. And we actually had wallpapered front covers and everything like that to make them into actual books. They were really stories. That was something that I always really enjoyed doing. And theater, that was something that just always spoke to me. I can't even put a moment on it. It was just something I always knew that I wanted to do.
Have you done any other plays in the past?
Yes, I have. I moved here from Toronto a year and a half ago, and I did my undergrad at York University in theater. So I've worked sort of as an actor and as a playwright and as a director and as a producer and an administrator and all of the other wonderful things that you do when you're trying to carve out a life as an artist.
Do you have a preference for any kind of work?
Well, I'm here doing my MFA in creative writing at UBC. So writing was the thing that I sort of decided to pursue the most, that I wanted to learn more about and expand my horizons. So as part of the program, I'm also learning how to write screenplays, and I dabbled in fiction. But directing also has a big part of my heart, and that's something that I will continue to do, hopefully, as well.
You mentioned directing and writing, and you're involved in the Brave New Playwrights Festival this year as an author as well. Can you tell us a little bit about the writing process behind the play that you're going to present at this festival?
Yes. So the play is called Wait, and it is a monologue. It was a solo piece that, for me, was about trying to sort of articulate the state of anticipation, really, and sort of how there's that lovely time in between two things that exists for such a short period of time, but you can find a real space within it. So it was a bit of an exploration of that, and I sort of invented this woman who's experiencing that and sharing that with the audience.
What were your inspirations for this particular piece?
To be honest, it was something that I wrote it this year, but I had written bits and pieces of it a couple years ago. It's been kicking around in my head for a while, just this. I knew there was something about that theme that I was interested in, but I wasn't quite sure how to get it out. And so I'm not sure what exactly prompted it in the beginning. I think probably a need for me to try to live in the moment. I am always very, very busy and always running from one thing to the next, and I think that was the reason that exploring that time in between became important to me.
And you mentioned that you have a directorial background as well. Are you going to be directing this particular piece?
I am not, no. So the way the Brave Brave New Playwrights Festival works is that there's a class in the theater department that is a directing class, and all of those students take on a play of their own from the plays from the creative writing department students. So I am giving my play over to a lovely woman named Caitlin Docking, and she is directing it.
You are engaged in the more administrative duties for the Brave New Playwrights Festival this year?
Yes, I am.
And this is your first time doing it?
Yes, it is. I took over from a woman named Claire Middleton who did it last year, and I shadowed her a little bit during the festival last year, but this is my first year as the producer, yes.
What have you learned from this experience so far?
I guess I've worked in a producing capacity quite a bit, usually as an associate producer in the past in Toronto, and I think the biggest thing for me, so that's always a supportive role. There's always somebody who's the sort of head, the producer. So I've always been doing this kind of work. There's nothing that I'm doing now that I haven't sort of done before, but the difference is that I'm the one in charge and I'm the one who has to remember all of the things and figure out when things need to be done by, rather than having somebody else who's responsible for that bigger picture stuff and giving me the individual tasks. So that's been, I think, really good for me to sort of take ownership of it in that way and figure it all out.
Brave New Playwrights Festival, can you tell our listeners when it's going to be and where?
Yes, it's at the Dorothy Somerset Studio on campus, and it's from April 3rd to 7th.
Do you have any other upcoming projects you would like to tell our listeners about?
Well, I'm actually... One of the other things that I'm doing right now is I'm developing a play through the Flying Start project with Touchstone Theatre and the Playwrights Theatre Centre. It's a full-length play, and there's going to be a reading of that at the BC Buds Festival at the Fire Hall at the beginning of May. I don't know the exact date yet, but that is something that's in the works.
And for those of us who want to follow these developments, do you have any social media feeds that we can follow?
I don't personally, but the Brave New Playwrights Festival, our website is www.bravenew.ca. It's important to check that out because the festival is different. There's two nights that alternate, so you see six different shows depending on what night you come. So it's important to check out the website and sort of decide which plays you think you're more interested in coming to see at bravenew.ca. And then our Twitter feed is at bravenewplay.
Do you have any advice for people who would like to follow in your footsteps, up-and-coming artists who might want to become?
Relationships, I think I have learned, particularly this year, forging genuine relationships. I think the idea of networking is often pushed on artists as a thing that you need to do, and I think to a certain degree you do. You have to go out and show your face and things like that, but I don't think schmoozing or going around and having a billion acquaintances is going to serve you as an artist nearly as well as having artists in your life who you have a genuine connection with, who you support each other and will root for each other. I think that finding your allies and finding the people that you connect with artistically who are interested, even if you don't do the same type of thing, or if one of you is a director and one of you is a writer, I mean, that's great because then that's a perfect fit, but to be inspired by each other and support each other, and if you believe in what each other, in what the other people do, I think that's going to serve you well.
The Brave New Playwrights also takes on volunteers who are relatively inexperienced as well, don't they?
They do, yes. So we had auditions at the beginning of January and the end of December. However, this year, it's a little bit different because we have an acting company. So there's a certain number of actors who are UBC students, UBC theater students, who are receiving course credit, and they're appearing in multiple productions in the festival, which is kind of an exciting thing for them to, because that's what a challenge as an actor, but also for the audience to kind of go one night and see different actors playing different roles. So that's a new development, and I think it's pretty exciting. We did do some auditions outside of the UBC community as well, but we're keeping it pretty tight this year, which is exciting.
And do you have any final parting thoughts for our listeners?
Just come on out to the festival. It's a really great variety of shows. There's some really funny comedies. There's some really touching dramas and just some really bizarre pieces as well. I think whichever night you decide to come, it's going to be you're going to see a wide range of stuff and some really, really talented young artists at work. And so many of the alumni from the festival have gone on to have really fantastic careers in the Vancouver theater and artistic community, and so this is sort of your chance to see that work in its beginnings, because I know a lot of the people involved are going to go on to bigger things.
Can you give us a brief teaser of some of the upcoming plays?
One of the pieces that just jumps to mind immediately is called The Last Laugh by Russell Hirsch, and it's a comedy about Inspector Sirius, who is investigating sort of once and for all why the chicken actually crossed the road. But it's a really clever piece, and it's a style of comedy that you don't see very often, and I'm really excited to see what the director Paula has done with it. We've also on the comedy train, there's a piece called Location, Location by Bryce Warnes, which is about two raccoons in Vancouver trying to find some affordable real estate. I'm really excited to see what the director's done with that as well, because there's, yes, the two raccoons and a seagull who's their realtor trying to find space, and so making a lot of decisions about how to portray that will be really fascinating to see.
Well, this was Brianna Brown here with us at CITR 101.9 and Scalds Hall. Thank you very much for being on our show, Brianna.
Thank you for having me.
You're tuned in.
I will say B, Peru.
I'll do it.
And that's your final answer?
Yes.
To buy a new car, you just want
$33,055.78.
To everyone who donated to this year's fund drive, CITR would like to say thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you to everyone who helped us meet and exceed our goal of $30,000. Your generous donations help us support local artists, businesses, and marginalized voices in the community. Here's to another 75 years of campus and community radio.
And welcome back to us live at CITR 101.9 FM, and this is Scalds Hall in Vancouver, which is still in the Milky Way galaxy. I know, we haven't moved from that. Isn't that weird? You'd think we'd have moved on by now, but we haven't. But we are going to move on in the show. And I do want to give a brief whirlwind tour of the second program that will be on offer. The first one listed is After I Heard by Renee Cochran. And it says, Michael needs someone to talk to. After he gets news of a friend's death, without easy access to his usual confidant, his mother, Michael fails to leave his house and seeks solace in a mystery ally. The second one is Class of 93. Ooh. 20 years later, and the grass is still greener, Class of 93 is the story of three women, Bronte, Sylvia, and Tamil, who find themselves reflecting on their life paths and choices at their 20th high school reunion. Warning, language and mature themes. Interesting choices of names. Bronte, as in the Bronte sisters. Tamil is a region in South India, and it's also a language. Hold Her Hand by Gorman Lee. How do you feel about eating placentas? Bruce, a grieving slut, is on the first date with Elizabeth, and it's not going too well. It gets worse when he bumps into a disgruntled former conquest and is forced into an inner dialogue with himself to face the impact of his mother's death on his love life, or else never make a real emotional connection with a woman again. A heartfelt comedy. And the next one is Honeymoon Phase by Ginny Monaco. A comedy about sisters and the men who love them. Ginny is a writer and a journalist living in Vancouver, BC, Milky Way Galaxy. I put that in there. She is a former UBC culture editor, and her nonfiction work has appeared in countless student newspapers across Canada. She is a vocal feminist, accordion enthusiast, and generally a pleasant person. Huh. Oh, that's the playwright. That's the playwright. Oh, that's not a synopsis. There is no synopsis. Oh, dear. We just have that. It's the honeymoon phase, and that was the playwright. Okay, Pigeons. By Tom Peters. A priest and a doorman walk into a bar, a tale about exploring the unconscious relationship between two con men. A lawyer and a cab driver all bumping into one another one night when they might never expect it. That's interesting. I'm playing a con man right now in the Vagabond Theater production of Fawlty Towers. I play the character of Lord Milbury. So I'd like to see what they do with that. The Plan by Miles Stein. Some people will do anything for money. After rent control laws change, a landlord's scheming wife and her scumbag partner devise a plan to make some quick cash. But when things don't go according to their plan, two stoner roommates' lives become their target. Well, there's a lot of room for humor in that. And that is the second program. The second alternate program that you will see at Brave New Playwrights. So there are two sets of six programs. Each night, each evening has three, an intermission, and then three. So to see them all, you have to go both nights. If one night in particular tickles your interest, then I strongly urge you to go out and support stuff like this, because the Brave New Playwrights only happens once a year at UBC, and it is the culmination of an entire academic year's work. The playwrights start writing these things in the fall, I believe. And as we heard with Brianna, they get cast in December. And so they've been working on these things for 3 months, and there's only going to be two performances each of these plays. Now, compare that to off-campus community theater. I'm doing 15 performances of my play. So this, you know, and then you have professional theater. Cats has been running since however long, you know. So a lot of work has gone into these, and there's a very small window of opportunity for us, the community of people who love stuff like this, to go out there and see it. And seriously, you know, come as you are, like, you know, as a ghost, you know, leave your body, come to see it. It sounds like a really wonderful opportunity, and it's something that my own advisor introduced me to just after, actually, last year's one. So I've been waiting a whole year to be able to see some of these, and I am certainly looking forward to them. However, we're going to move on for the time being here at Skulls Hall. Several months ago, we had an audio dramatist by the name of Clime Levine come onto my show. In the interim, we have had another audio dramatist contact us here at CITR 101.9 FM looking for a home to a homeless audio drama. And that is the exact sort of thing we like to provide here on Skulls Hall. So what we are about to hear is an interview with Adam Frank, who actually teaches here at UBC and who has created already two audio dramas and is working on a third. And he has very graciously agreed to share his four-part audio drama with us. And we are going to be airing one part every week starting in a few moments. So the 29th, the 5th, and will accumulate on the 12th. And April 5th, for those of you who do not know, will be the UBC block party. And it'll be a fun time because it's the last day of classes and they always have fun things planned. We here at CITR 101.9 FM are going to cover a portion of those events. However, that will happen in the evening. Skulls Hall will still happen in the afternoon. So before you start your weekend early, you can start your weekend early with us and with Adam and his lovely audio drama. But why don't we hear an introduction into it? And so just after this message, we are going to hear the interview with Adam Frank. Stay tuned.
Jazz is a word that means many different things to many different people. The best definition of jazz that I know of is the jazz show on CITR with yours truly, Gavin Walker. Monday nights, 9 to midnight, with the jazz feature at 11 o'clock. Check us out every Monday.
Tuned into CITR 101.9 FM in Skulls Hall, and we are here with our next guest, Adam Frank. Hello, Adam.
Hi.
How are you today?
Pretty good.
Well, tell our guests and listeners out there, who is Adam Frank?
I'm a writer and a teacher. I teach in the English department here at UBC, and mostly I work on 19th and 20th century American literature and poetics and media stuff. I teach courses on television. I've been interested in radio and teach a lot of film in my courses. So it kind of go across various media.
Now you've produced an audio drama.
Yes.
How did that come about?
Well, so Some Mad Scientist is my second full-length audio drama. The first one, called Overpass, a Melodrama, was also a collaboration with a composer named Sam Shalabi. We had been doing some work together for a while, for kind of the last 10 or 12 years, I guess. So this just kind of grew out of our collaboration and out of some interest.
What got you into producing audio dramas rather than just teaching about media?
Sam asked me to write liner notes for his first solo CD about 12 years ago. And what I did was I ended up writing, instead of a kind of piece of critical whatever, prose, I wrote a short play. And he liked it, and he said, we should not waste this on liner notes, we should just, you know, write a few more of these and we'll set the whole thing to music. So we kind of started collaborating on music. We called it opera, tongue firmly in cheek, because the kind of thing it wasn't opera, but it was word and music put together in some way.
Did this collaboration carry on to your most recent project?
Yeah, he did the music for Some Mad Scientists.
What is Some Mad Scientist?
It's an adaptation. It's a sort of re-adaptation of a pretty obscure ancient Greek text that describes an encounter between two major figures in ancient Greek philosophy, Democritus and Hippocrates. And it's interesting to me because it was described by the critic Bakhtin as the first instance where you have the maniac theme, what he calls the laughter of mad science. So I was really interested in finding out more about this text that described this kind of scene of mad science, which has long been at least an obsession of mine, if not sometimes a habit.
Are you involved in sciences yourself at all as a hobby?
Well, I mean, as a younger person, I was interested in pursuing sciences, yes, before I got converted, if you want to put it that way, to the language arts, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the journey of creating your audio dramas.
Well, I had no idea what I was doing. What I was excited by is the fact that anyone can do it with relatively little equipment and, you know, as you know, this kind of freedom to just put something together. And then, I mean, I'm also, as a writer, interested in bringing the work that I write into some kind of performed form. And so it seemed that audio drama was a really great way to go about this. And mostly it was just making every single mistake you could possibly make. At first I thought for Overpass, for example, I was doing a documentary, and it took me about 8 months to figure out that I wasn't doing a documentary, but I was using documentary material and integrating it with other sort of fictionalized material. So mostly it's been trial and error in my experience.
Did you voice the whole thing yourself?
No. Some Mad Scientist is I used real actors. So the first project I used people who lived in my building. I used, you know, people I knew, amateurs, like, you know, untrained voice people, but people whose voices I kind of liked. And Some Mad Scientist, I had a contact at VFS at the Vancouver Film School, and he got interested in the project, and we put together a group of actual actors and recorded them in a studio, and it was sort of semi-professional, I would say.
Did you do the directing yourself?
Yes, and that's one thing that I've learned. Never direct your own work. One of the things that I've learned since Some Mad Scientist is it's always better to hire a director or to have someone direct your work for you. And that's one of the regrets I have about Some Mad Scientist. We've done it now as a theater workshop presentation at the Belkin Gallery here at UBC, and it was directed by Alex Ferguson, who's connected to theater here. And that was really interesting to see someone else take it in hand and have different ideas about it. That was very exciting to me.
Do you have any plans to do future audio dramas?
Yeah, right now I've got a big project called Radio Free Stein, which is a project to take as many of Gertrude Stein's plays as possible, the ones that make sense in radio form, and make them into radio. I'm doing one right now with a composer named Dorothy Chang at the School of Music here, and that's directed by Adam Henderson. And we are doing a concert staging of this, actually, at the Western Front in early May. And I'm just finishing up editing the audio on that now, basically, this month.
What advice would you give to people who are just starting out, who might be interested in pursuing similar work?
Make all the mistakes you can. I still feel like I don't know what I'm doing, and I'm just learning as I go along. And so I don't yet feel like I'm in a position to impart much in the way of, you know, wisdom, words of wisdom. Radio is such a weird medium because it's got all these formula, but the formula don't need to be followed because it's not, you know, what we think of as radio is not around in the same way it used to be. So you can kind of do whatever you want as far as I can tell. And I'm interested in finding out what I can do.
Can you give us the online links where we can find your work?
Sure. Some Mad Scientists has its own dedicated website. It's www.somemadscientists.org. That's O-R-G. Radio Freestyle does not yet have a website, and I'm hoping to develop one if I get this big grant that I'm finding out in the next month or so. And an overpass is available, actually, on CD from Alienate Recordings. It was released in 2007.
Do you have any final parting thoughts you would like to share with us?
I'm very interested to find out how people find this work, which I enjoy making, and I find, you know, works in its own ways. I'm interested in finding out how music and words can go together in ways that aren't like song and aren't like opera. So any feedback that people have for me about this is something I'm really interested in, so don't hesitate to get in touch with me.
So there you have it. You can listen to the audio drama from its source, and we will also be airing it in just a few moments here on Skulls Hall. So, listeners out there in the radio world, take a listen and give active feedback. Thank you very much for being on our show.
Thank you, Brian.
Last year, over 650 BC teens aged out of foster care without a permanent family.
Adoption is not just for babies. Teens need families too. Only 24 teens in BC were adopted last year.
November is Adoption Awareness Month. To find out more about adopting a teen, contact the Adoptive Families Association of BC. Call 1-877-ADOPT-07 or visit us at bcadopt.com.
Of all kinds, was separated off from the totality.
Out of the way! I must get past!
Sexual intercourse is a mild apoplexy, for man issues from man and is torn away, separated by a sort of blow.
I can't control my oxen! One side, madam, or Hades take you!
Patient citizen, something ails her.
In fact, we know nothing firm. But what changes according to the condition of the body and of the things that enter it and come up against it.
Come, miss. Off the road. Away from danger.
Think of yourself, friend. Forgetting one's own ills makes one bold.
You live nearby. Where is your home?
I came to Athens and no one knew me.
Oh, dear. It's Abdera, not Athens.
Good morning, cobbler.
Good day, good day.
How goes the world?
It's stumbling and muttering along, I suppose.
You're cheerful as usual, I see. How's business for you?
Fine. Men tend to like my shoes.
And women my gowns. They're in demand all over town this year.
We dress them all.
Or else we get dressed down. Tell me, cobbler, is it true the news I've heard?
About Democritus.
They say he's lost it.
Completely.
Forgets himself.
Entirely.
Wets himself.
Not that!
A shame, a man of such intelligence. You've read his work.
Concerning the Magnet is most excellent. Of Reason and the Senses, even better. Democritus, the prince of philosophers, has no equal. All subjects bow before his glorious mind. Nature, music, poetry, math, he's written on them all.
Such wisdom in Abdera. Even Athens can't compete, though Socrates, I hear, is great.
I came to Athens and no one knew me. I am Democritus.
Good day, madam. We have not met. What did you say your name was?
Dressmaker. Something ails her. I fear she may be...
I am Democritus.
Oh, my dear. Democritus is a man.
And a philosopher.
There are many Democrituses. We are a legion, numberless. I am but one.
What does she say?
I do not know. It strikes me as familiar, though.
You say Democritus laughs at everything. Marriages, bankruptcy, public speeches, diseases, war and death. His mind's gone now with all traces of his former wisdom.
Such wasted skill. He could tell the age of a goat by drinking of its milk.
He even knew a virgin by her voice. Years ago, he did that trick with me.
And me.
You know our sage. Have you met him?
I am he.
The poor girl is gone.
Perhaps there's some connection.
You don't mean...
An illness?
Disease minds?
Contagion?
Dreadful, I hope not.
Horrible to think.
We must inform the council. Bring her to the Agora directly.
To the Agora, come, poor woman, come with us.
Trust us, dear, but quickly.
It will be clear that to know what kind of thing each thing is, in reality, is impossible.
They gather at our door.
I haven't seen a crowd like this since epidemic times.
It may be even worse than that. The city wants its festival. What will it get instead?
Order! Order! Council must begin. Counselors of Abdera, a rumor spreads among the people of our town. They say Democritus is mad. Awful, yes. But is it true? Who here has evidence?
I do, counselor. I visited Democritus just 2 days ago with a list of city matters in hand for some advice. With each report I read aloud, he scarcely could contain his mirth. I spoke of wounded soldiers and the progress of our wars. I spoke of recent finds in gold and silver mines, of advances in shipbuilding and ways to store wheat, of corruption in office, of architecture, the streets. As for advice, he simply laughed at everything I said. Alas, the rumor must be true. Democritus is mad.
No, not him, not our sage.
Citizens, hear me. I live beside Democritus and see him every day. That man can't wrap his mind around a clam. Awake at night, he sings in imitation of the birds and slithers on the ground like a snake or a lizard. What I've seen and heard with these eyes and ears would make you quake with fear. And worst of all is his laughter. Yesterday, I walked home thinking of my son, honored for a noble soldier's death at Persepolis. Democritus looked at my face, read my thoughts, and laughed. Is this madness, I ask, or simple cruelty?
Cruelty!
Madness!
Madness!
Treason!
Councilmen, order! Recall our gratitude to this great man. He wrote this city's laws. His wisdom indispensable, Abdera has flourished in his care for many years. We owe him our attention and our help. What causes this strange illness, this degraded laughter?
I know not, counselor, but observe the ratio. From the very heights of wisdom, Democritus now drops to idiocy's abyss.
Counselors, you say Democritus was once not mad, but wise. Yet how are we to know? Perhaps his wisdom and his madness grew as one, intertwined like vines. If so, then can we trust his laws? Abdera itself may be deranged, a madness spread from man to law to man, each one of us susceptible.
Well, oh,
that our very laws could be
ours.
Council, save us. We tear our hair in grief and great distress.
We bring a girl who thinks she is Democritus. We fear the worst, a mad contagion.
Let go of me. When people scratch themselves, they experience pleasure like that of sex. That's true, isn't it? I am Democritus.
What are we to do? If our very laws are ill, Abdera itself may need a cure.
Counselors, a plan! Invite a doctor to Abdera to cure Democritus and ourselves, the great physician Hippocrates of Kos.
Yes.
Would he agree to come?
He is an old friend.
Offer him our gold.
Yes.
Gold!
And rule of the city until Democritus is cured. We serve at his command.
Sovereignty!
Yes.
Democritus will rule us.
What say you, counselors? Shall we send for Hippocrates of Kos?
Send
for him! Fellow citizens, all hear me. Fear not. The council will bring Hippocrates the physician to Abdera to cure our sage. Democritus and our city will be saved in time for festival!
Is this joy? If so, there is something good. Joy and sorrow are the distinguishing marks of things beneficial and harmful. Yet, I feel something else here. Some sorrow in these men. How can I know its object or meaning? I would rather discover a single explanation than acquire the kingdom of the Persians.
Careful. That extract comes from herbs Critias himself picked.
Pungent. From the mountains.
Yes. And of exceptional quality due to the thinness of the air. Mountain herbs absorb more life, so they are expensive. Careful.
Perhaps you would like to do it?
No. Your hands have always been steadier than mine. Go on.
These herbs, are they worth the expense?
Most certainly. Critias's eyes and nose are exceptional. He is the finest herbalist in Greece. We trained together years ago, you know. Excellent. Seal the bottle. Let us proceed to the next admixture.
Doctor! Doctor Hippocrates, are you there?
Ah, an interruption. See who it is, Malamet.
This way, please. A patient, master.
By the gods, you must help me!
Gently, citizen, gently. What ails you?
My knee! I can barely walk!
Lie here, let us examine the problem. Slowly, carefully. Yes. Yes. Malamet, come. What do you see?
Erupting sores around the left knee, master.
Yes. What else? What do you hear?
A problem of breath.
Aha! What would your diagnosis be then?
By the gods! I did not come for treatment from your slave, Hippocrates!
You are fortunate to have his attention. My slave, too, is a physician. Tell me your diagnosis, Malamet.
An excess of black bile. An obstruction has caused the bile to become overheated. So it would appear.
Good.
I make the same diagnosis. Prepare the treatment.
The pain! My business suffers. I cannot afford to be lame!
Try to be calm while we care for you, my friend. The art of medicine depends on opportunity and the doctor's ability to make use of it. You may have ignored your condition too long.
The knee is ready, Master.
Place your hand in this basin of water. Watch, it is very hot.
I can accept the pain. If my knee improves...
A welcome attitude. Now, for the obstruction. Yes, this needle will do fine. Malamet, support our patient while I begin.
Damn you! Accursed fiend! Are you physician or torture? Give me that!
Hippocrates!
See how it feels! May your children watch while you bleed to death, then feast on your entrails!
Well, that was not very successful.
Are you hurt?
Not seriously. No patient has tried to stab me with my own needle before.
I will bandage the wound. He raised his hand against a citizen. You will bring a lawsuit against him, of course.
No, no. It was the overheated bile that caused his behavior. Did you notice his inflated penis? Sexual excitement, as you know, is due to the breath and excessive heat.
But you must seek some recompense. It may be his temperament and not the disease that accounts for his action. Stupid men lacking self-control deserve to be punished.
You would have most of mankind punished, Malamet. I have no need for recompense.
Your wife would say otherwise. My mistress tells me that the stonemason will not continue to work until he is paid half of what you owe.
Ah! We promised him too much! Let him tie his stones around his neck and walk into the sea, and you along with him. Forgive me, Malamet. This interruption has irked me. Of course we need more room for our researches, or else we will never advance our learning. Take this patient. Diseases of the bile are most difficult to treat. We physicians struggle against our limited understanding of the human constitution. We make generalizations. But individual bodies, even of the same kind, differ from one another. Each sets limits by reference to its own nature. Consider that just as human natures differ in ways we do not understand, so do medicinal plants. Sometimes, a snake might have injected its poison into a plant, or some other reptile might blow its breath on it. If there's no sign, spot, or odor, and we use this plant to make our medicines, our treatments will fail just by bad luck. Crataeus's excellence lies in just this, his exceptional ability to detect such small differences. For individuals merely approximate their kinds, Malamet. Their natures and their circumstances differ. This makes our art a difficult one, always possible to improve in practice.
But Hippocrates, surely your skills are as great as Crataeus's. Why not command similar payment for your art? The city of Kos would be pleased to offer its great physician his due.
You know how such flattering talk angers me. Besides, a free art should itself be free. Those who work primarily for pay force their knowledge into submission, reducing it to slavery. I wish all physicians would join in their efforts to cure this disease, the love of money. Oh, Malamet, slave though you may be, you are still fortunate to have a master other than money. Now, let us return to the more interesting topic. I was just developing my theme. What was it again?
You were speaking of the difficulties posed to medical art by bodies that are not alike, Master.
Yes, that's it. With time and attention, I can... By Zeus... Another interruption. Well, see who it is, Malamet.
This way, please. An ambassador from the city of Abdera, Master.
Greetings, Hippocrates, descendant of Asclepius, great demigod of physicians.
Greetings and welcome. You arrive from Abdera.
Directly.
Then you have traveled a long way. Malamet, a drink for our guest. I see that a matter of some urgency brings you here. Quickly, good man, what is it?
Hippocrates, my city is in danger. Our sage, Democritus, has fallen ill, his mind destroyed by madness, sent to punish him for his vast learning.
The philosopher Democritus. Malamet and I have learned much from his writings on nature, on logic, on causes of various phenomena. We speak often of his excellent works.
Sadness. Our sage, reduced to gibberish, his thoughts confused by constant and incessant laughter. His guidance dearly missed. City council closed its doors. The citizens grow anxious at wit's end. I fear that Abdera may be abandoned. Your friend, Philopoemen, on behalf of council, charged me to bring you this letter. Honorable Hippocrates, please take it.
Of course. It says here that Democritus is forgetful and absent. Appearance wasted away. He laughs at everything. You will cure a city, not a man. Amazing that the entire city is in such an uproar about one man, as if it were one man.
Oh, great physician, only you can help. We beg you, come to us. Heal Democritus and Abdera. We give you gold, for the city is rich. Become our lawmaker, judge, and king, for the city is doomed without you. Hippocrates, come to Abdera. Receive our gifts and gratitude. All of Greece will thank you.
Recently, Ambassador, the king of the Persians asked me to heal the plague there and offered me many cities filled with the wealth of men. But I refuse to help an enemy of Greece. Now, don't you agree that it would be as wrong to save the lives of enemies as it is to heal friends for pay?
Oh, how can we tempt you? Your refusal brings Abdera to its knees.
Rise, Ambassador, rise. I do not refuse Abdera. But do not be offended if I think it is nature herself, rather than your city, who calls me to save Democritus. I will obey her and the gods' command to heal the great man, for I doubt that they have punished him. Go, tell your city that I will come. I make my arrangements immediately.
Oh, generous physician, Abdera is in your debt. I go to bring the news. Much needed hope to my people. We will be saved.
And welcome back to us here at CITR 101.9 FM and Scalds Hall. And that was part one of Some Mad Scientists. And stay tuned next week for part two and subsequent parts in subsequent weeks consecutively. And to close out the hour, I have a short but very unusual and interesting bit. I have a couple of educational pieces that were done and are now put into Creative Commons, and perhaps they might not be overly interesting, except for one particular thing that I think everyone out there will find noteworthy, is that they have been narrated by the great Boris Karloff. And seeing as how we have just about enough time to listen to one, that is exactly what we will do. So we are about to listen to Boris Karloff tell us about Stratford-upon-Avon. Take a listen.
This is Boris Karloff speaking. I'm here with a story for you from the files of the Reader's Digest. This is the story of William Shakespeare's hometown. From October to April, life in this ancient market town of Stratford-on-Avon flows as gently as the river itself. But comes the spring, and business booms. Long lines of pilgrims pay their shillings to see the house where Shakespeare was born, his mother's girlhood cottage, the property he bought when he returned as the local ne'er-do-well who had made good. Stratford-on-Avon is now second only to London, the chief dollar-making tourist haunt in Britain. But it took Stratford 250 years to wake up to its Shakespearean opportunities. In his day, Shakespeare's fellow citizens regarded him as a rather dubious blessing. To them, the theatre was a den of vice. For almost a century and a half, the only outsiders interested in Stratford were occasional scholars. And it wasn't until 1769 that a local landlord was able to rally his townsmen to a public celebration of Shakespeare's anniversary. That year, the great David Garrick came from London to organize a festival. With cannon salvos, public breakfasts, and fireworks, there was everything except a Shakespearean performance. For 100 years, this kind of celebration prevailed. Local businessmen made a little bit of pocket money out of the visitors, but the town seemed destined to remain a big, dull village. It was saved from this fate by a bearded giant of a brewer named Charles Edward Flower. It started when, back in 1870, the local folk wanted to erect a monument to Shakespeare. Said Flower, "Shakespeare means plays, good ones. The monument we want is a theatre where people can come and see those plays." Flower scoured England to raise money for a theatre, but the London press and the bigwigs snubbed him. They called Stratford dull, forsaken, and said that its citizens were nobodies. Flower roared back, "We've waited nearly 300 years for the somebodies to do something. Now we'll show what the nobodies can do." He built a theatre with his own money, and Stratford was on its way. Other local citizens went to work to remake their once sleepy community, and they stripped from their homes, shops, and inns the ugly plaster fronts added in later centuries to reveal the fine timbered facades that lined the streets when Shakespeare lived. Fireplaces, cupboards, panels, beams, all the handsome Elizabethan details have been restored. And now the entire town is a living monument to William Shakespeare, shared by the plain folk of Stratford with the people of the whole world. I found the story of Stratford-on-Avon in the Reader's Digest back files, but in the current December issue of the magazine, there's the story of another small city with a big list of visitors. The city of this story is in France. The attraction, not a man, but a cathedral. The cathedral was built many centuries ago by the whole town. Men and women pitted the slight strength of their bodies against the heartless weight of stone to bring heavy limestone blocks from the quarries 7 miles away into the town. Stone by stone, year by year, the church rose. The style in which it grew was new then. The soaring style of the pointed arch and the flying buttress, which today we call Gothic, and the town, Chartres. The whole story of the miracle of Chartres, the building of the Christmas story in stone, appears in the December issue of the Reader's Digest. I'll be joining you soon again with more transcribed stories, but until next time, this is Boris Karloff saying goodbye.
And that was Boris Karloff here on CITR 101.9 FM. And if you plan on looking that up, the December issue he was talking about was from 1957. So it was a little while ago now. It's almost been as long ago then as 1870 was to him from 1957. It's been a long time indeed. Well, anyway, just a few quick things before we wrap things up. Brave New Playwrights, you can check them out online at bravenewplaywrights.ca. And I just wanted to squeeze this in before the end of the hour. Booking tickets, call them 604-822-2678. That is 604-822-2678. Or by visiting ubctheater.universitytickets.com. That's University Theater. Sorry, that's ubctheater.universitytickets.com. And what we have coming up next, who we have coming up next is Radio Zero with Tyler and Cam. That will be coming up next. So why don't we have Boris Kolarov play us out? Because, hey, how often does that happen?
This is Boris Kolarov speaking. I'm here with a story for you from the files of the Reader's Digest. This is the story of the most versatile of all living substances. It has held man in his cradle. It